I didn't hear my intro music. Anyway, this is Eddie Rye Jr., the host of Urban Forum Northwest, and it's my pleasure to receive my guest today. We'll have Congressman Bobby Scott, who is on the line. We have Chairman Raymond Miller, Reverend Dr. Wayne Jenkins, Pastor Leslie Braxton, and Kevin Meeks from New Beginning Christian Fellowship will be on, as well as the Sound of Northwest, Vanessa Bruce, Artistic Director, and Shirley Young, one of the choir members. So we're going to go right to Congressman Bobby Scott. Congressman Scott, how are you doing?
Doing fine, Eddie. How you doing?
Okay, now, I just, what's on everybody's mind is, will the country default on its debt? Because we see the stock market is taking a dive. So I just wanted to find out from you, sir, if you could give my listening audience your perspective on what's happening with the debt ceiling.
Well, that's up to the Republicans in the House. They have come in really an astounding posture. They walked in and said, we're going to blow up the economy of the country if you don't agree to these demands. Some of them have something to do with the budget, and some don't. But they have a list of demands. And usually when you negotiate, you get something and I get something. You get something and I get something, and we kind of negotiate. Well, their view of negotiating is how much on their list are they going to get? And they're going to be reasonable. They won't sit. They're not insisting on all of it. But what do we get? Nothing. So, I mean, it's just they think that's reasonable negotiation. It's just incredible that they think they can come into negotiations, make demands, and expect people to jump. But, you know, you just said whether or not the they're going to default. They have made demands that put us in a budget situation that is untenable. I think the reason they have to do it this way, rather than the normal, if they want to cut spending, all they got to do is cut spending. They control the appropriations committees. All they got to do, but the problem is, they can't conform the appropriations bills to their rhetoric. And they say, well, they're not going to cut this, not going to cut that. They can't draft a bill. They have the Veterans Affairs appropriations bill. It's frankly been marked up. They figured they're going to do the easy ones first, the ones everybody can agree on. When by the time they can't try to get under the numbers that they have to get under, they had significant cuts to veterans' health care. Here we are on Memorial Day weekend, and they're showing cuts in veterans' health care. They said they're not cutting veterans. Well, they say that, but when you put numbers on the page, that's what they're doing. And so, Democrats aren't going to agree to that, but they can, you know, if they agree with the president and can get a debt ceiling bill out of the House without Democratic help, you know, more power to them. But they have pranced around talking about what they're going to do with the budget. And they're unable to put numbers on a page. Now, what I think they want to do, one, I think they want to default to ruin the economy because the economy is so good, Biden will be strong next year, and if they can ruin the economy, it will help them politically. But the other thing they're doing is making Biden agree to the cuts. So when they cut veterans' health care, they can say, well, these are cuts that Biden agreed to. What they're doing is making no sense, and they expect people to go along with it. So I don't know what's going to happen. We have what's called a discharge petition. 213 Democrats have signed it. We need 5 Republicans, and if 5 Republicans join us, we can bring a clean debt ceiling to the floor, pass it, and be finished with it. This is a manufactured crisis. It has nothing to do with the budget. Let me tell you, Eddie, I am embarrassed to listen to these people talk about fiscal responsibility. Did you know, I mean, listening to them, you wouldn't know that this was true, but every Republican president since Nixon, everyone without exception, has left office and left for their Democratic successors a worse deficit situation than they inherited. Everyone, without exception, and Trump was on the way to doing that before the pandemic. And every Democratic administration since Kennedy, without exception, has left for the Republicans a better deficit situation than they inherited, without exception. And Biden has already cut the deficit $1.7 trillion, and his budget cuts it another $3 trillion going forward. And we got to listen, and they're trying to lecture us on fiscal responsibility. I think the best thing they could do is just get out of the way, and we can get back to balancing the budget like we did under Clinton with no help from them. You ask what's going to happen? I don't know. They can't conform their appropriations bills to their rhetoric. And in a couple of days, I think it's going to be apparent.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the stock market, and, it's absolutely amazing. I hear there's a resistance to having the wealthier people pay their fair share of the taxes, that they're opposed.
If you got rid of Bush and Trump tax cuts, you would be almost with a balanced budget. And so when they say it's spending, it's not spending. It's these tax cuts that weren't paid for. Now, if it is spending, that's fine. Just tell us what you're going to cut. They want to cut in general. They want to cut 22%. They want to go back to another couple of years back spending levels. That's reasonable. That's fine. Name the cuts. And when they start naming them, you end up cutting Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, child nutrition, veterans benefits, housing, rail safety, workforce safety. I mean, name the cuts. They can't. They won't do it. They won't do it. And when they do name the cuts, it's a couple of million dollars here and a couple of million dollars there. They're trying to get to a trillion. You cannot conform their appropriations bill to their rhetoric, and they know it. And so rather than go through the normal process of draft the bills and show your hand, that President Biden produced a budget. That means numbers on line items. What they passed a few days ago is really a press release and aspirational, but it doesn't say what was being cut. And until they do, this is all just nonsense.
Well, our listeners definitely needed to hear your perspective being back there on the Hill on a daily basis. Now, I talked to Congressman Emanuel Cleaver yesterday, and he said everybody went home, and I guess you guys are on notice to be able to return in 24 hours. How does that work?
The Republicans took off, went home. About 80 or 90 Democrats stayed around and spoke on the floor after the Republicans left, talking about the importance of staying here and getting our work done. If they're going to talk about the budget, let's talk about the budget. But they do not want to draft budget bills to explain their rhetoric. Every time you say, well, what are you going to cut? You're going to cut this or that. They say, oh, no, we're not going to cut veterans. We're not going to cut child nutrition. We're not going to cut this. We're not going to cut defense. We're not going to cut Social Security. We're not going to cut. When you get to the end of the discussion, they haven't cut anything. And so that's why we just put your bill on the floor so we can see what you're talking about. And when they put their Veterans Affairs bill on the floor, they had significant cuts to veterans health care after they said they weren't cutting veteran support.
And we have Memorial Day coming up. And like I said, I mentioned coming out. But I would really like to have you hear from Dr. Raymond Miller, who is chairing the NAACP Area Conference Armed Services and Veteran Affairs Committee. So, Dr. Miller, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I know you heard some of the conversation. So from a leader of the Veterans Organization, you just heard Congressman Scott mentioned that veterans' benefits are on the chopping block. So what are the veterans doing to ensure that after serving the country, they don't get messed over?
Well, you know, every politician always come up with the same old line that we're going to maintain our sacred obligation to our veterans, while at the same time they cut services for veterans. are we going to be out there? And we've been talking to our legislators and our senators and around the country, and we've been going around the state of Washington. I have been talking about this 22% cut that they're proposing in the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we can't maintain, they can't serve veterans today with the budget they have today, and they're going to talk about they cut it. So we're going to make sure, we're going to be fighting. We're going to be fighting every day to make sure that we get the benefits that we service, that we served. We stepped up and we raised our hand and we said that we will defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic. But that was a two-way contract that they also said that they would make sure that we had certain benefits and services once we got out of uniform. We're fighting every day to make sure, and this is Military Appreciation Month on top of that, and we're coming up on Memorial Day, and May 25th is the day that we called it a National Day of Honor, where we celebrated the 1.5 million African-Americans who served during World War II, and we turned that into all African-Americans who served, because most of the time we don't get the benefits and the services that we supposed to get, and we got to fight harder than the European population of Americans to get the benefits and services we need. And so we're out there talking and fighting. I'm glad to hear what he said. And we've been like, you can't cut the budget. And we know that this Deficit Reduction Act should be passed as a clean act and not talking about budget. Let's go to the budget process. And as the representative said, and do it the right way, the way it's supposed to be done.
Pass a clean debt ceiling.
Let's pass a clean one. Like we always done.
It doesn't stop us from considering cuts in a normal way. They control the Appropriations Committee. If they want to cut, they can cut. But the problem is they can't conform these bills to their rhetoric, because they're talking about 22%. When you start talking about 22%, you start talking about cutting veterans, increasing wait times to get into VA hospitals, cutting benefits, cutting health care, wait time for appeals on disabilities because you got fewer and less staff to process them. You know, you can't just cut and nothing happens.
Yeah.
100% true.
Yeah. I would like to ask Reverend Dr. Wayne Jenkins if he has a question or comment for Congressman Scott.
No, sir, not at this time.
Okay. And I see Harley Bird has also joined us, so welcome into the conversation. So I think Commander Miller, he's over so many different organizations, has made it very clear. So Congressman Scott, I thank you for taking the time out there, but I also want to ask you, what do you think that the voting public should do to try to help the folks on the right side of this issue? What can we do? Do you think public demonstrations? What will help? What will help move the needle?
We need to call business groups to ask them to call their Republican friends. All we need is 5 to sign the discharge petition. It will pass on the floor and pass the Senate and be signed by the president, and we raise the debt ceiling. All that does is put the normal appropriations process in the normal course of business, where the Appropriations Committee drafts the bills and they're debated, and they're debated on the floor, and they pass or fail on the floor. That's the normal process. This hostage taking, where you threaten to blow up the entire really global economy unless we submit to demands that make no sense. You need to talk to the Republicans to say, we need 5 to sign the discharge petition, and we're out of this crisis. This is a manufactured crisis. We've raised the debt ceiling 3 times under Trump. We've never defaulted on our debts. And here we are, they're threatening to default unless we do things that they can't even figure out how to do without misleading the public. They said they weren't cutting veterans' benefits, but when they drafted the bill, big cuts for veterans' benefits, veterans' health care. And so you need to talk to Republicans and tell them to sign the discharge petition, and talk to business groups and tell them to call their Republican friends to tell them to sign the discharge petition, all of the Democrats in the House to sign the discharge petition. That's 213. We need 218 to be able to vote on it, and we're out of this crisis.
Well, that's a good job. You're on top of it, Congressman Bobby Scott. We really appreciate your time today. And I sent Austin a thank you note already for you being able to be on the air today. And I want to see if Dr. Raymond Miller can hold on us for the most of the program, because that is Memorial Day coming up. And we did have a very significant event that happened today. There was no opposition, apparently, to Air Force General Charles C. Hugh Brown being named as the Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff. So I guess the anti-affirmative action people are going to leave that one alone. As long as you're putting your life on the line, there's no opposition to affirmative action.
Eddie, he wasn't affirmative action. He was chief of staff of the Air Force, so this is a natural progression.
Exactly.
It's just a natural promotion. So I've met him several times. He's very professional, and so he'll do a great job.
I'm just talking about Fox's spin on his promotion.
they'll spin anything, but there's nothing to complain about on this one. Eddie, it's good talking to you. I got to go.
Okay. Thank you for all you do, Congressman Scott. We really appreciate you.
Thank you.
Okay. Dr. Raymond Miller, can you hold on with us for a while? Because I want to have you in and out of the program. Are you good for the hour?
I'm good.
Okay. Because I want to now, Harley Byrd is on hold. And so is Dr. Wayne Jenkins, and they both had a role in the late Matthew J. Thornton, Reverend Matthew J. Thornton, had a role in both of their lives. So I would like to start with the eldest of Reverend Thornton's understudies, and that would be now Reverend Dr. Wayne Jenkins, who is the senior pastor at New Hope Baptist Church in Pasco, Washington. And I was telling him he needs to write a book, because he went from an original member of the Seattle Black Panther Party to being a preacher, from a panther to a preacher. So Reverend Dr. Wayne, why don't you go ahead and start off, sir?
Thank you, Eddie, again. Thank you for allowing me to be on this call. It was good to see you at Pastor Thornton's going home service. You and I have a long history, and I appreciate you. You were very instrumental in my first career as a fashion designer. So I really appreciate you, your kindness and your graciousness for my life. When talking about Matthew J. Thornton, Pastor Thornton was not just my pastor, he was my mentor and he was my friend. Senior in high school is when I first got to know Pastor Thornton. His brother-in-law, Newt Golladay, which was Sister Nell Thornton's brother. He and I went to Garfield High School together, and he was part of that family. So I did have contact with Pastor Thornton. When Pastor Thornton became really instrumental in my life when I joined the Friendship Baptist Church, where Pastor Thornton was pastor. And I was there for the first couple years, and Pastor Thornton saw something in me, and he asked if I would go into formation as a deacon. And I went into formation as a deacon. I completed that training, and Pastor Thornton ordained me as a deacon. And I served in that position for almost 7 years. And so he watched over me, he taught me, and he encouraged me to study. He allowed me to be the assistant Sunday school teacher, where I really got a pretty good background on scripture and being able to stand before God's people and talk about God's word. Pastor Thornton always encouraged me to be the best that I could be. He always said that our past does not define us, but it's where God takes us in the future. And so under his leadership and tutelage, he taught me a lot about how church life is. The church, he always said, the church is not the building, but the body of baptized believers. So in 1997, I answered my call to go into the ministry, and Pastor Thornton encouraged me to go to seminary. And matter of fact, he supported me to go to seminary. And Pastor Thornton, the first national convention that I went to was because of Pastor Thornton. He paid for me to go there. He watched over me. He introduced me to a lot of teachers, a lot of preachers. And I made relationships that I even have to this day. Pastor Thornton would teach me on how to construct a sermon, the three parts of a sermon, you know, your text, your introduction, your body, and your clothes. And he always said what Paul told Timothy. He said, study to show thyself approved, a workman who needeth not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Mm-hmm. And Pastor Thornton, I still have to this very day a great love for Pastor Thornton. When I was asked to pastor the New Hope Church in Pasco, Pastor Thornton preached my first service when I was ordained, when I was called to pastor the New Hope Church. He was there. I stayed in contact with him, not some of the time, but all of the time. Wherever he went, I served him. I didn't mind. Matter of fact, I appreciated the fact that I could carry his Bible, that I could make sure that he had what he needed when he did preach. Mm-hmm. And there were some times that because of my relationship with him and my commitment to him, my loyalty to him, opened a lot of doors for me to preach at other churches.
I want to also bring Harley Bird. Are you online?
Yes, I'm here.
Because Pastor Matthew J. Thornton was a pipe fitter and was intricately involved with the United Construction Workers Association. I remember seeing in the demonstrations. So Harley Bird, one of the leaders of UCWA, United Construction Workers Association, fought for blacks to get into building trades. We need to have y'all come back because it's horrible right now for black folks in the trades. I understand that 60% of African-American males don't make it through the third year. So, but Harley, why don't you share some information and some memories about Reverend Matthew J. Thornton when he was a pipe fitter and advocate with UCWA?
Yeah, he was, he was a person that you couldn't, overlook. First of all, he was a tall, gentle giant, big guy, and he always had a smile on his face. He turned out in support of us all the way back to when we started out as Central Contractors Association. And I don't know exactly how he got involved, but I know he got involved. He was with us at the Garfield's at the swimming pool, McGarrett's pool. He was there when we was trying to make sure that we had a role in the Judge Boleyn's court order, that set the requirements, for the building.
Lindbergh court order.
Lindbergh, yeah. And Boleyn was he was a referee. He was the one that was in charge of, the court order advisory committee, which I served on. But anyway, he was there. I mean, I remember you were there as well, Eddie. We camped out on the federal lawn on Madison. Was it 4th and Madison?
5th and Madison.
Yeah, 5th and Madison. We camped out there for a week, and we were there round the clock until, the judge came down with an order that included us in the whole decision, and we had an intricate part in implementing his court order.
Okay. And so, well, look, I want everybody to hold on. We're going to take a break. We also have Reverend Dr. Leslie D. Braxton and Kevin Meeks on hold as well. So, Eric, we're going to take this break and come back. We'd like to have you guys hold on because Reverend Braxton and Kevin got an offer for you that you can't refuse. So hold on, please. And we'll get back to you, Commander Raymond Miller.
At Sound Transit, we not only connect more people to more places, we're making life better for all. We're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire region of opportunities, like jobs and school. If you have an Orca card, you can just tap and go. We have reduced fares for seniors and riders with disabilities. For adults with lower incomes, check out Orca Lift and pay just a dollar for your ride. To plan your trip or to learn more, visit us at soundtransit.org.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend Port Gen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
Tell your friends about Alternative Talk 1150.
At Urban Forum Northwest, I'd have to give a shout-out to Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, the City of Seattle's Purchasing and Construction Services Department, the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office, and the SeaTac Bar Group, LLC. They own the African Lounge and Martin Room Bar on Concourse A out at SeaTac, and they got one of the top restaurants in America on the airports. So I'm back here with Reverend Dr. Leslie D. Braxton and Kevin Meeks, the media coordinator for New Beginnings Christian Fellowship. And Pastor Braxton is the pastor of NBCF. So we got a big event coming up on June 18th. This last year we had one, it was outstanding and fantastic. So I'll start with Pastor Braxton and we'll talk to the media coordinator next. Go ahead, Rev Braxton.
Good afternoon to everybody. We're happy to be here to promote Songs of Black Folk 2023. Our maiden production was last year on Father's Day evening. At the McCall Hall, and it is the celebration of an African musical tradition that jumped the Atlantic Ocean via the slave ships and settled into the soil of the daily lives of an enslaved people of African descent and thereafter otherwise oppressed, and music that has functioned as the soundtrack of our 400 plus year odyssey in an anti-Black white supremacist society. And music that evolved into spirituals, from spirituals into blues, into jazz, into gospel, into R&B, hip hop, even spoken word. But no matter what genre of music you listen to, they all function in two ways. Number one, it is a tool of political resistance, whether it is civil rights marchers saying, ain't gonna let nobody turn us around, or Tupac Shakur saying, keep your head up. And as a source of hope, again, whether it's civil rights marchers saying to us, we shall overcome someday, or Michael Jackson saying, we are the world, we are the children, or Charles A. Tinley saying, we shall make it home someday. And so this, against the backdrop of Juneteenth, we're pulling together once again a 50-piece orchestra, a 40-voice choir, dancers, African drum groups, and five featured vocalists from across the country, one of them local, two of them from the Northwest. And we've got classical music, we've got R&B, we've got jazz, we've got hip hop, we've got rhyme. It's all in one, and it tells the story of how music has kept the rhythm of our advent, our movement forward, because music moves to the rhythm of hope, and hope moves to the beat of the music. And so we invite everyone to come out. You can go on our website, www.songsofblackfolk.org. It will tell you everything about our history, profiles on the featured performers, ticket information, sponsorship information, songsofblackfolk.org. And I'm going to let my sidekick, if I'm Batman, this is Robin. In a digital world, the media services coordinator is the assistant pastor, whether you want to call him that or not, Mr. Kevin Meeks. He's the only man in the history of Christendom that makes people look forward to the announcement portion of the service.
Thank you very much, Pastor. And I think it's a privilege to be on your show here today, Eddie, to talk about Songs of Black Folk. This is one of the most premier programs that you're ever going to see here in the Pacific Northwest. I'm originally from New York. We had the ability to go to Broadway. We had the ability to go to Lincoln Center, things like that. We don't have a lot of that here, at least seeing us here in the Pacific Northwest. So this is one of those shows that you don't only want to bring yourself. You don't want to bring your mother. You want to bring the whole family, because my mother used to tell me exposure is the key. Well, we need to expose everyone to what's going on. And from my perspective, again, from the media services perspective, we're just here to enhance the production that's already there. This is a flat out 6-star production. 6-star. I'm going to say that again. 6-star production that you definitely want to see. And our job from the lights perspective, audio perspective, is just to help enhance the senses, because we all know if we enhance the senses, you're going to walk away and remember this for the longest time ever. So we want to make sure everyone comes out to Songs of Black Folk, because this is just that one.
We're going to have the artistic director and the conductor on with some of the talent in the coming weeks. Ramon Bryant Braxton did an outstanding job last year. And is there a video of last year up on the NBCF website?
We're actually going to try to show it this weekend for Memorial Day. So it will be on our website for the whole day of Memorial Day on demand, so anyone can see it at any time of the day.
And you certainly will get a treat, because I was there.
Again, it is Father's Day night, June the 18th, 7 p.m. at the iconic stage of the Paramount Theater. June the 18th, 7 p.m. Go to www.songsofblackfolk.org.
Okay, and you'll be hearing from somebody from the Songs of Black Folks for the next 3 weeks, because it's very important that we get people the exposure, get the place sold out, and just to sit back and this, you'll enjoy everything that you will hear and see. It's an outstanding performance.
No matter what type of music you love, we got you. World class, but featuring African American talent.
Amen.
All right, then. Well, I want to thank you, Reverend Dr. Leslie Braxton, and also Kevin. I want to thank you for all the work you do out there, too.
Thank
you. Join a committee or find a church. That's his closing statement at the end of the service when he does his closing up remarks at the on Sunday. Okay. So thank you all very much. I want to all go right to Raymond Miller. So we're going to be acknowledging all the veterans on Sunday, right, Pastor Braxton?
Yes.
Okay. We have
Dr.
Raymond Miller on the line, so I want him to have a few more comments before we go down and start talking to Ms. Vanessa Bruce and Shirley Young. We also have Dr. Wayne on. We want to have him have a comment, and as well as Harley Bird. So Dr. Raymond Miller, why don't you go ahead once again and reflect on this Veterans Day that's come, I mean, this Memorial Day that's coming, where we remember people who went off to foreign shores, who died and came back home to segregation, as my uncles did during World War II.
Right. Thank you, Eddie, and Reverend Braxton and Kevin. I was at the Songs of Black Folks last year, and it was a wonderful event, and I'll be there again this year. But also that, you know, that we all don't want to take it into effect that May is Military Appreciation Month. And this is the time where we honor all those brave men and women who presently serve and who have served, and is a national reminder of the courage, determination, and patriotism that all servicemen members display in fighting for and protecting the United States of America. As a result, this month is important to both civilian and service members. It is a chance for the entire country to unite in support and celebration. Every role in each branch is honored this month, from the foot soldier to the Navy chief, from the Air Force navigator to the Army general. This month is also meant to show appreciation for the families of our service members who tirelessly stand by and support their relatives. We also honor the memory of our fallen service members who sacrificed their safety and ultimately their lives for their nation. And we also honor our veterans who have now passed on, who fought for freedom, justice, and peace. And we also honor all those who serve and all family members that serve. This is a time, in spite of what is happening with our Congress, and we know that what 1.5 million veterans live in poverty today. 90%, 80% of homeless veterans experience alcohol, drug, and mental health issues. 90% of homeless veterans receive an honorable discharge. 67% serve 3 years or more. 47% are Vietnam veterans. 15% have served before Vietnam. These are our World War II and career era veterans. Can you imagine being homeless in your 80s and 90s? 15% are Iraqi and Afghan veterans, and you can expect that number to increase as they struggle with PTSD and unemployment issues in the coming years. 30% of veterans aged 18 to 24 are unemployed, double the rate of non-veterans in the same group. Yesterday, 22 veterans died from suicide. Today, 22 veterans will die from suicide. Tomorrow, 22 veterans will die from suicide. On average, 22 veterans die every day from homelessness, poverty, and hopelessness. And this is the time to raise awareness of the serious issues service members and our veterans experience. And we cannot be cutting the budget of the Department of Veterans Affairs by 22% when they have a budget that they can't even take care of the veterans today when they're their present budget. And I'm going to propose that we should make sure that every veteran get at least $100,000 when they get out of the military, just for serving as separation pay. That would be, we got about 25 million veterans out there, and that would be less than what the New York Jets are paying their quarterback, $60 million a year. Kansas City Chiefs pay their quarterback $45 million a year. And we got 1.5 million veterans who are living in poverty today, living on with their SNAP and their disability income. And the budget is, we already got 150,000 backlog. That means 150,000 veterans are waiting to get their benefits and their services through the Department of Veterans Affairs. And they're talking about cutting the budget to increase it by 135,000 just with that decrease in budget cuts that they're talking about. We need to make sure this is the time we're supposed to be honoring and support our veterans, not putting them deeper into poverty. And so for the 25 million veterans out there, we thank them, we appreciate them, we honor them, and we know that they are the backbone of this country, and they have proven it time and time again.
And I know that you also formed a chapter over in Yakima. I want to ask Dr. Wayne Jenkins, his interaction, if he has much interaction with the veterans over in the Yakima area. I mean, the Pasco area.
Yes, I do. There's a lot of veterans here that I have some that are members of my church and the other African-American churches that are in our area. We also provide services. We provide support. And we also do ministry to them. The thing that the New Hope Church do, we meet veterans right where they're at. Whatever is going on in their lives, we meet them at that point. Also, I serve as chaplain at the Benton County Correctional Facility and also Cadillac Medical Center, where I'm also very attentive to the needs of veterans. There's a program here. It's called Veterans Court, where a lot of veterans come in, and instead of having to wait for the criminal justice system, the Veterans Court can come in and intervene where they can get better treatment instead of just incarceration. I also know that the African-American soldier, African-American people have fought in every war that this country has ever been in. We have shed our blood, we have died, but we are the last ones to be notice for heroic efforts For us, it has to take a movie for people to see what we have done for this country. Without us, this country would not be what it is today. And we are the last to get services.
That's right. And we got to start off with 254 years of free labor or more.
Right.
And that was during slavery.
Yes,
and then, like as you indicated, in every war, and it's so unfortunate because I remember my uncles, World War II, because I'll be 81 on Friday, and they came back saying, well, and still got to ride in the back of the bus and go on the colored side and go to the back of the restaurant to get my food. So hopefully that will change. I know some people don't want it to change, but hopefully that will change soon. But I tell you what, Dr. Miller, do you have any, we got about another minute or two before we go to the break. I just wanted to find out if you had any more information you want to part with us. What can people locally do to support the veterans that put their lives on the line for this country?
Yeah. You know, one of the things, though, you need to talk to your legislators, not just your congressmen but your local legislators, your mayors, all organizations should be working for veterans, helping veterans make that difficult, sometimes difficult transition from military back to civilian life. And we should be doing that. And we're doing it. I mean, we kind of were the first veteran court in Washington State was in King County, and we put that in 1997, I believe. We got the first veterans court one of the first in the country. And so 1997, so we're working every day. And I'm also with General Brown getting promoted to the chief of staff of the Air Force and getting his new promotion. He's going to be the Tuskegee Airmen. Annual convention is going to be in Albuquerque, New Mexico this year. And we've been trying to, he tentatively is our keynote speaker. I don't know if that's going to change, but from August to 17th to the 19th of August in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the Tuskegee Airmen will have their national convention there. And he is a pilot. So he's a former pilot, still a pilot. And so a fighter pilot, voting in Afghanistan and Iraq. And so you just got to just make sure that we maintain our budget. And that, okay.
Hang on with us because I want you guys to hang on because Ms. Vanessa Bruce and Shirley Young got some information you might use too. So, Eric, why don't we take this break and come back with the artistic director and the choir members from The Sound of the Northwest?
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend PortGen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
At Sound Transit, we not only give people more reliable ways to get around, we're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire system of opportunities, like jobs, school, friends and family, and to the airport. Our commitment to economic development provides opportunities for women and people of color to compete fairly for Sound Transit contracts. All of this helps our regional workforce grow and thrive. Go to soundtransit.org and search DBE to learn more.
No other station delivers this much variety. Alternative Talk 1150.
All right, Eddie Rye back at Urban Forum Northwest with my next guest, and that would be the artistic director for The Sound of the Northwest, Ms. Vanessa Wells Bruce, and Shirley Young, who is also a member of the choir. So I want to start with Ms. Vanessa, the artistic director. Welcome to Urban Forum Northwest, ma'am, and tell us what will be happening on June 3rd.
Sure. Thank you for having us and giving us this time. On June 3rd, we're having our spring concert at the Langston Hughes Performing Arts Institute. The theme of this year's concert, it's at 7 o'clock on June 3rd. The theme of this year's concert is History, her story, their story, music from different perspectives. We're going to continue in the legacy of our founder, the late Juan Huey Ray, who passed away last year. The program is going to feature spirituals, freedom songs, traditional gospel and contemporary music, and poetry from the words of people like Paul Laurence Dunbar, Langston Hughes, Brian Lewis Mack, Maya Angelou, and Amanda Gorman. In the cultural climate we have in the United States and in Seattle, we think that music can invigorate and propel people to make changes. We are very aware of the social consciousness of our nation, and we're going to be singing songs such as a song called Say Her Name, which mentions the martyrdom of many people who have died. And as I did my research, there are at least 21 people who have died at the hands of police since in this 21st century. We're going to sing a song that was inspired by John Lewis, Making Good Trouble and Getting Out to Vote. We want to engage younger audiences, and we're in partnership this year, and we're very pleased of that, to be in partnership with Jazz Ed, which is a group of people who provide music education to people no matter what their economic or social status. And with the schools next year canceling music programs, Jazz Ed may be a great vehicle for students to learn. So this, we're excited about this concert. We have young people from Jazz Ed as well as some of our older singers singing with us this year.
So that would go, I would go now to Miss Shirley Young and tell us what role you'll be playing, ma'am.
Yes, I will be singing with the choir. I have been with the choir since the beginning, which was back in 1987. And we're just excited to be able to present this program on the 3rd of June. We are doing a lot of rehearsing and getting ready, and with the assistance of Miss Bruce, who is our artistic director, we're just excited to come before the city and present this program. We have about 25 people that will be performing, and it will be our honor to come before you and perform. We have about 20 songs that will be privileged to sing, and we're just excited and hope that the community will be able to come out and enjoy what we have prepared. The community will be first will be always on hand, and the community will not just be there for the ongoing of the program, but we will always provide special music.
Okay. Well, Ms. Bruce, can you tell us what some of the songs are and who else would be involved? You have individuals in the choir that'll be doing solos. Is there anybody in the music session? Let's share that information with us.
Well, this year we are doing songs, traditional songs such as Don't You Let Nobody Turn Me Around. That's one of the spirituals. We're doing some gospel music. We're doing Total Praise by Richard Smallwood. We're doing a couple of songs by local people. We're doing a song by Cora Jackson, who is well known in the community, as well as Jacqueline Hardy, who was very well known in Seattle. She's a choir director and a part of the Edwin Hawkins Music and Arts organization. We do not have special guests, but we have a lot of talented people in the group who will be participating. We have a young man who's excellent at the drums. He's also going to be doing some solos. We're doing, as I said, Say Her Name. We are doing, don't know what it feels to be free. Very well-known song. We're interspersing some old spirituals like Oh Freedom and Wade in the Water. And we're doing them in new ways and mixing them up with contemporary songs.
And this is going to be The Sound of the Northwest. Will be Saturday, June 3rd at 7 o'clock p.m. at the Langston Hughes Performing Arts Institute. Now, is there a website or a place where people can go and purchase tickets right now?
Yes, you can. You can go to www.thesonw.org. That's www.thesonw.org. There you can make a donation, and actually, if you put in the notes of your donation, tickets, that's how you will get into the concert. We're suggesting a donation of $20, but whatever you can pay, you can also pay at the door.
Okay, well, that's very fine. So we'll give it a shout out again next Thursday on the 1st. Make sure that we get as many people there as possible. We appreciate the work that both of you are doing in the community and carrying on the legacy of my good friend, Juan Huey Ray. So thank you all very much.
Thank you for having us.
Dr. Wayne, do you have any comments you'd like to close out with?
Yes, I would. I want to thank everyone that was on the program today. A lot of good information about what we do and how we do it. And also, Eddie, thank you for giving me this platform to remember and talk about and cherish my friend, my brother, and my pastor, Pastor Thornton.
Okay, thank you very much, Reverend Dr. Wayne Jenkins. Dr. Raymond Miller, the commander, you had about 1 minute. Tell us know what you got to say before we start celebrating the Air Force General Charles C. Hugh Brown, who was nominated by President Biden to be chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the second black since Colin Powell.
That's honorable. And we also take note that the Secretary of Defense is a black man. And so the top two members of the military complex will be the Secretary of Defense and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. They both will be black men. And so we look forward to that. We also want to make sure that this is the time where we thank our members of our armed services and our veterans for maintaining some of the dignity and the quality of life that we have and the sacrifice they make.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody. I want to thank you, Ms. Shirley Young, Ms. Artistic Director Vanessa Wells Bruce, Reverend Dr. Wayne Jenkins, Reverend Dr. Leslie Braxton, Kevin Meeks, Congressman Bobby Scott. I want to thank all of you for your participation today, Harley Bird. So I want to let everybody know that we want to thank Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, City of Seattle's Purchasing and Construction Services Department, the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office, SeaTac Bar Group, LLC. They own the African Lounge and the Mountain Room Bar out at SeaTac. When you go somewhere, if you go out of Concourse, they go visit those brothers. And Eric, thank you very much for the day, too. And this program will be available in an hour or two on Alexa and my podcast for 24/7. So you can still get the message out, let your people know. Urban Forum Northwest, have Alexa play the latest edition, and you can hear yourself. So thank you all very much and have a good one.